Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Hello and welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of the Turner's Take newsletter. I'm a broker here at Daniels. I work with broker assisted clients, online clients. We have a great software here. Hybrid is a mix of both. Speculators, hedgers, lot in the grains and the livestock, but also across the other futures and options market. So, take a look at us at turnerstakeag.com if you're interested in what I do. Also, all my contact information is going to be in the show notes. And again, turnerstakeag.com. And if you want to sign up for the newsletter or the podcast, it is free. You can go to turnerstake.com, sign up for turnerstakeag.com, sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get it. What we're going to end up doing here, I think, is doing more of... We used to have different product lines, you know, Turner's Take Ag Marketing, Turner's Take Market Alert, the Turner's Take Weekly. We're going to just combine all those now, and because a lot of this is going to be centered on grains and livestock anyways, and then if we have, do have trade ideas, I'll put that through the regular newsletter. So that are some of the changes that we're excited about coming forward. It makes a lot of sense to streamline the products for us. So let's get into what's going on here this week. The stock market is surprisingly up today. You know, the big news macro-wise has been Trump and Pelosi calling for impeachment inquiry. And quite honestly, I thought the stock market was going to crash, and it didn't. I don't know, you know, after reading some of the reports and talking to some of the traders and seeing the analysis, basically, they don't think the case for impeachment is... very good right now. I guess the market doesn't, especially since Trump released that transcript. Also, it's just an inquiry, and I think the other thing that I'm hearing about is even if it'd be like a Bill Clinton situation where even if he were to be impeached, then there's no way the Senate's going to follow through on it. There's not enough votes. I think it has to be 60 or two-thirds, and I think the Republicans control the Senate. So that's... That's what it sounds like to me. So right now, the stock market had opened earlier this morning, and we're expecting one of those days where we'd be down, you know, hundreds of points in the Dow, and you know, tens, twenties, thirties in the S&P, and it just didn't happen. And right now, we're actually up a little bit on the day. Trump was actually talking about a China deal who could come sooner than most people think. So. Market seems to be pretty rosy, or at least the stock market. Soybeans are down 7 cents today. Corn's kind of hanging in there. You know, soybeans had a run up. Well, actually, I'm going to a little bit more in the macro markets, so I'm going to switch into grains. So that's really been the macro story of the day, was the what's going on with Trump. Because the thing is, too, is the anything that happens, like if the administration is now fighting with the Democrats about impeachment, you know, does that take away from the trade deals? I mean, that's really where the market would be concerned. And it seems like the market doesn't care that much about it right now. Also, in terms of the macro news, and just real estate sales have been pretty good. New home sales are actually a lot higher than they were expecting. So that is... relatively usually good for the markets and the healthy economy overall. So it looks like we're just slowly grinding higher here in the stock market. Growth looks okay, and there's no real telltale signs of like a recession or anything right now. There certainly could be, but it's not in the cards in the short term, at least. So on we go. So that's the macro picture in the grain and livestock markets. Soybeans had a nice run up yesterday as frost came back into the weather. forecasts. It was showing up on the 10 to 14 day, and for, I would say, depending on the model you looked at, anywhere between October 3rd and October 6th, you saw some frost risk in the northern plains and the northwest Midwest, which really means like northern Wisconsin. So the northern plains and northern Wisconsin, basically the Dakotas and Montana, you know, from, let's say, Montana all the way to Wisconsin, that northern part of the country, we were seeing frost risk. That was causing a rally in the beans more than the corn. I think there's probably more beans that need to develop up there that would completely shut it down. And then today, when the yields, when the weather models came out, there's still some frost risk, but it's not as wide spread, and it's, instead of like 3rd to the 6th, now it's looking 4th to the 5th. So the probability and the severity is lightened up. Now, going forward, you know, it's September 25th, over the next week or two, you know, these models will change. The weather models will change. And if it gets colder, we could really see a weather rally here. Now, I will say this. We got a couple things coming up here on the grain markets. One, for soybeans and corn, and wheat too, but for mostly soybeans and corn, it's going to be relevant here, is the stocks report. That's coming up on Monday. And the market's actually looking for a little bit of a draw on the corn. I actually think it could be a little bit, unfortunately, higher. Where stocks could be closer to 2.5 billion. The reason being is exports were very poor in June, July, and August for corn. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the ending stocks come up a little bit. That could add in a little risk to the corn market as we go in. The big story, though, is really going to be is what do the yields look like. And I've actually gotten some reports sent to me for the yields. They really are all over the place. Kentucky looks good, but there's a lot of issues popping up. And I think farmers, when I can tell from beans and corn, both, that some of these early yields coming in do not sound great. I mean, yeah, you hear, you know, the occasional one where it beat their expectations. Most of them are lower than expected. Now, what does that mean for national yield? I still don't think it means lower than 46 for beans or lower than sub 160 for corn, but I think we could be 162 to 165 in corn, and I think we could be 46 in soybeans. So let's go over that real quick, what that would look like, because the yield reports I'm hearing, at least, aren't great. They're not terrible, but they're not great. So let's say for corn, and I'm gonna get, and the reason why it's important is because I still think there's weather and risk premium built into the corn market. At 375, you can make a case that there's still 25 cents of risk premium built in the corn market, because at a 2.4, 2.5 old crop carryout and a 2 billion or 2.1 billion new crop, we shouldn't be at 375. I mean, with those numbers, we really should be at 350 or lower. And the reason why I think we're at 375 is the market knows or has a good feel that maybe yields are coming down and so are harvested acres. So if we do have harvested acres at, let's say, you know, 80 million instead of 82, and the yield's 162, ending stocks could be 1.6 billion. And that makes the case for the high threes. It makes the case for filling that gap on the chart. But if we're at like 82 and 166, we're still at a 2 billion carryout. So, you know, at one, and what I'm doing there is I'm also taking into account probably a little bit lower on the exports for the year and a little bit lower on ethanol than where the USDA is too. So based on my models, based on what I've been looking at, I'm thinking if we're at 80 million acres harvested in corn and a 162 yield, we've got about an ending stocks about 1.6, we can go up and fill the gap. And who knows, maybe we're there. Maybe that is where this market ends up going. What I don't see us is going through four. So if you are trading in this market and we're at 375, my target would be 390. If we get do get issues this fall, if you're buying options, if you're an option seller, you know, on the rally up to that $390, $4 range, I think, especially if I'm a farmer, who owns the grain and is going to plans on storing it for a while. Sometimes, like, we'll do covered calls at that point. If we get that rally, you're probably looking to do covered calls at that point. For the speculators out there, the guys who like to sell options, I would think the range would be, you know, 360 to 390 in corn right now. And you know, for the futures guys who just like to play the ranges, those are the ranges to be long and short that I'd be looking at right now. I think 375 is kind of in the middle of the range, which is why earlier this week, or last week, I was talking about the 370 November corn straddles. I think these work at the 375 level too, and not to be long, but to be short. I kind of like that play this time of year, and we did this last year too, and we did a pretty good job on it. We sold straddles as, you know, as the crop got known a little bit more to collect premium, especially for farmers who have grain in storage and have had made sales. I think those make sense. I even kind of like them on the spec side too. If you have any questions directly about how to do that, let me know, especially for the farmers out there. We could probably pick up nickels and dimes along the way here, which I think is going to be a big help. Because when I look into next year, the crystal ball, all right, for next year, and I'm kidding about that, there's no crystal ball. But, you know, when we start to say, all right, let's say we are at best case scenario. We have 80 million acres, in my mind, 80 million acres harvested, yields 162, ending stocks are 1.6 billion. If we have 93 million acres of corn next year, probably 94 million acres if corn's going to be that high, and a 178 trendline yield, we're still at a 2.6 billion carryout, right? So that's almost the best I can kind of hope for with just regular acres and a trendline yield. Or 93 million acres and a 178 yield, we're still a 2.5 billion carryout. And that is even if we have, for this year, 80 million acres harvested, so losing 2 million acres on the harvest, and the yield comes down to 162. All right, that's about as bullish I can get. As bearish I can get is, let's say we have 82 million acres harvested, the USDA's right, and I'm going to have to put you on hold. All right, so I am back. So anyways, if we are closer to like 82 million acres harvested and 166 yield, you know, ending stocks then are about 2.1, 2.2 billion, right? Now, the significance of that is, you know, if that's really where we are, if we're really around a 2 billion carryout this year, and we get 93 million acres and a 178 yield next year, so it's trendline stuff next year, all of a sudden, next year's new crop carryout looks like 3 billion, which means corn needs to go into the low threes, right? So, you know, there's a lot riding on this harvest. And there's a lot of risk in the back end of what's going on in corn right now. So, you know, I see Dease corn, we're at 404 for 2020, Dease 20 corn at 404, and I'm looking at my models, and if the harvest, you know, is just okay, and our production number is at around 13.6 or 13.5 billion, then we're at risk next year of having a 3 billion carryout. But if we're at closer to a 13 production, then this year ending stocks are 1.6. Next year's new crop carryout is closer to 2.5, and it's not as bad. I still think it's bearish going forward. What I'm hoping to do is, I think harvest is going to be a little bit worse than expected. I do think the harvested acres come down. I do think the yields come down. Wouldn't be surprised if we went up, filled that gap, in the corn charts, and so in the short term, I'd like being long, or selling straddles and collecting premium, because even if we go up, I think we come back down at some point too, because I think that ends up being the top, and I think at 390, we see a lot of selling, in that market, especially not just from traders, but from farmers too, and then we gotta, and we're gonna be looking at next year, and I'll tell you what, it's not a pretty picture, so if you know, even if we're at a 13 billion production for corn this year, we're still most likely going to produce another 15 billion of corn next year with the acres and the yields. And the demand just isn't there. I mean, if we could export more and feed more, you know, that'd be great. You know, then, but that's not what it's looking like right now. So, so that's where we are on the corn market and the soybean market. Again, I think we can rally here. I know with the you know, the problem with the whole impeachment thing and the weather thing, it sent soybeans down about, you know, 7 or 8 cents today. But I think it's holding in relatively well. You know, when I look at soybeans, and we're going to keep the harvested acres the same. The USDA is probably, or who knows? I mean, we still have, you know, fields that haven't potted yet. That's going to be interesting, because if soybean harvested acres comes down to 74 and the yield's like 46, you know, we're at 400 million carryout, and all of a sudden soybeans really should be into the mid to high nines in that point. Right now, just so you know, the USDA is talking really more about 76 million harvested and a yield of almost 48. So, I mean, I think the best case scenario for prices for soybeans is it's you lose 2 million on the harvested acres, maybe a million, maybe 2 million, and the yield comes down another 2 bushels. And that just relates from the late development. If that should happen, then ending stocks could end up being around 400 million, which would be very good for soybeans. Unfortunately, though, next year, if that's the case, then we're going to have 86, 87, 88 million acres planted again, and with a 50 trend line, we're going to be, you know, 600 or 700. But it seems like there's yield risk, real yield risk, with soybeans right now. And if it, I mean, it has the potential here. I mean, I don't see, as a, you know, as a trader, I mean, buying, I mean, looking at the calls, like something, you know, only 10, like, like 10 cents out of the money in soybeans don't cost a whole lot right now. And if we do get that big shock, which we're not going to see until the next WASD and also the field reports, soybeans could get some momentum. You throw in a potential trade. And you also, you know, if China, you know, is going to be committing to buy more soybeans, that number can keep on improving. So I kind of like beans here. I do think there is about 30 to 40 cents of risk premium beans, though. If we really do have a 48 yield and those harvested acres really are 70, you know, 76, we're going to have an ending stocks of around $1 billion for old crop and well into the 600s for new crop. And in that case, you know, soybeans really should be 840 or 850. But if harvested acres are lower and yields are lower, and my gut feeling right now, talking to people, seeing all the yield reports, looking at the crop progress, it is going to be lower. I think beans have a good chance to rally here. And the first target would be about 920 November. If we start getting to $10 in November 20, we're gonna have to do some kind of sales and marketing for that crop year. So that's where we are on that. The hog market is rallying today. I mean, the October hogs are up. So I'm going to switch over to livestock. October hogs are up 2.5. Dece is above 70. A close above 70 is actually, I think, bullish for the hog market. If we can close above 71.25, which is where we're almost at now, that would be a new high that we haven't seen since July. That would be bullish for the market also. So technically, you'd think there'd be some short covering and buying into it. As you all know, you've been listening to me, I have been bullish on cattle here. Dece cattle is trying to fill that gap. We're right at the 50-day moving average. The packers right now, because cash prices are depressed out in the country, because they don't have the capacity to process the animals, what that's done is it's brought down cash prices and the futures for cattle. But because of the shortage, the beef, it's a strange dynamic, the beef prices have actually gone up a little bit. So the packers out there have great margins. They have the incentive to buy the animals and process them. I think in the end, that's what's going to win out here. Also, as capacity comes back into the market, we'll see better cash and futures prices. So I still expect these to fill that gap. We have seen the gap being filled in live cattle. Pretty much, if you look at April, Feb, and June, we're pretty much there. So it's really decent October that have lagged behind. I think it's going to be a struggle for October to get through there. But I do like December's chances. And I do like the December-June future spread I've been talking about, too. So I know the bears will say there's plenty of supply out there. The weights are increasing. I agree with that. I would also like to point out to everyone is that we're going to have a global crunch for animal protein. South Korea has found more swine flu. It looks like swine flu has spread completely through Asia. North Korea doesn't release anything official ever about anything, but it sounds like through rumors and reports that, you know, in the northern part of North Korea, they've completely wiped out the hog herd. It's now spread out through the south of the country, which is how it got into South Korea. It sounds like, I mean, this story for African swine flu is probably going to be worse before it gets better. And what it's really going to do is, because it's going to just decimate the pork production in Asia, is, you know, we'll eventually see, that's not going to be, you know, gangbusters, but we should see steady and improved demand for beef and other proteins while the hog herd is rebuilt. So I do think there is a bid for beef and cattle in some way, whether directly or indirectly, you know, on that. So I like cattle. I think it got a raw deal from this whole Tyson thing. I think feeders are also going to be eventually in high demand too, and you can already see the uptrend. The feeders have filled the gap. November, I mean, it's already done a trend change. It looks like November feeders, you can make the case, are now in an uptrend. And I would expect the fats to follow. So that's how we've been trading the markets. We've been generally bullish cattle, bullish feeders and fats. I'd rather be long hogs than short, though I do know we do have big supplies here. And most likely you want to be more bullish the back months than the near months, because if and when there's a deal with China and the rest of the world are going to import our pork, it's not going to happen that October contract. It's most likely going to happen farther out. So I do like those, you know, June hogs are practically, June hogs right now are 92. I mean, if you look at it, you really should take a look at these charts. So, while, you know, the nearer months are much lower because they're not expecting one. I think what's eventually going to happen is we will see demand, if not from China, from Asia, other Asian countries. However, they still have their own stocks, and they're still working through their own stocks. At some point, they're going to run out and have to import heavily. So I think brighter days are ahead for the hog market, probably just not right now. I like the cattle first. And then on the grain markets, just keep in mind, the stocks report on Monday could set up for a bearish surprise, but after that, I think we're going to be focusing more on the lower harvested acres, the lower yield. That'll ultimately bullish for the grain markets, and then any kind of bullish moves we can get from now in through October until maybe into November when this crop is made is probably going to have to be a selling opportunity for next year. Also, keep an eye on South America. There is some dryness in Arizona and Brazil, and that needs to be monitored. So that is the game plan going forward. Finally, I'm looking at my notes here. Something I did not mention, I wanted to in the beginning, the stock market. One thing I've really liked to do is I always view the stock market as it's kind of a long-only market. I know I've talked about this before, but when it comes to the stocks, like 85% of stocks are owned outright, and there's only like about a 15% short interest in the stock market overall. Unlike commodities, where for every long there's a short, the commodity market cannot exist without a long and a short on each side. Someone has to be able to own a contract, and the other side of it, someone has to be willing to be short the contract. Otherwise, it does not exist. What's also interesting about the stock market is, you know, if you're the head of a company or pretty much, you know, if things aren't going well, it's your job to basically cut costs and find efficiencies or streamline business. Or maybe you don't spend as much on R&D or you don't acquire a company, right? And times are good, you know, you're looking to grow. When times are bad, you're still looking to make a profit. So over time, you know, stock indices, now any individual company can fail, but an index isn't going to fail, right? So what's interesting about something like the S&P 500 is over time, you look at a chart, it continues to go higher. When you look at it, it's because of global growth, technology growth, efficiency growth, and also inflation, right, which will send these companies up higher. So the reason why I bring that up is for people who have a commodities account with me, what I've mentioned over the years is, you know, when we had high interest rates, and I am getting to a point, when we had high interest rates, you used to be able to buy T-bonds and trade against the T-bonds. But now interest rates are so low, it doesn't make sense. The transaction costs nearly take away all the coupon payment. But one thing I've been doing is on the dips in the E-mini S&P, now that we have that micro S&P, the micro S&P is worth about $15,000 of the stock market. Alrighty? it's $5 a point. So if the S&P is around 3,000, times that by 5, that's about 15,000. The margin on it's only $600, right? So if you have a $30,000 futures account, and let's say the stock market breaks 5%, you can buy a little bit of the S&P on a very low margin and then hold it in the account for really, I mean, the way I've been doing it is I've just been holding it, buying and holding it, rolling it every 3 months. And, you know, we'll buy the breaks on the micro. We never want to be leveraged. Like, you know, if you have a $15,000 account, we'd only do one. I mean, if you have a $30,000 or $45,000 or $60,000 account, maybe we only do one. Maybe if we really like the stock market, we'll be in, you know, two or three of them. But the thing is, you know, you can be in basically fully invested almost in the stock market. Use a very small percentage of your account tied up in margin. Buy the breaks. If we get up to 3,000, 325, maybe a sell one. There's something I've always liked to call in these kind of situations, position traders, called trading around position. So let's say, you know, your goal was to, let's say you got a $30,000 account. Your goal is eventually to have two of the micros, you know, or max. You know, maybe you buy one on the big break lower. You hold that for over the long term. And then for the second one, maybe you're buying support and selling resistance, always keeping the core position. But the second one, you're kind of trading around. That's known as trading around a position. You always hold the core, and then the second one is more of the range-bound swing trading thing. Anyways, I've always liked that. And now that micro exists, you can do it. So the reason why I bring it up when I thought of it is because this morning when we were selling off, I was thinking, oh, if we get the big sell-off, you know, it's going to be time to you know, add on to that core position. Because a lot of times when I think of it like in a two lot, or like, you know, or units of two anyways, it's, you know, you have the long one on, and then if we come down in the S&P like 50 or 100 points, you can buy it, the second one, and then if we come back up to 3,000, you can always sell the second one, but you always keep the first one. I like that, and I like doing that, and I just think it's kind of the new, for me, it's the new way of how you can use the futures account cash that you have open. It's not as like safe as a bond, right? But just because of the low margin of this thing, and it's basically the cash value is 15,000 of the stock market at a time. It works. It makes sense over the long term for an account that doesn't max out on margin. You can use while it still has cash in the account. So if you're a client of mine and your balances dictate that, you can do it. If you've ever wanted to have like a stock and a futures account at the same time, you just invest in the stock indices, that's an interesting way to play it too. But anyways, that has always been my general theme here on the stock market. So if anyone would like to talk to me further about that, please give me a call or shoot me an email. I meant to put that in the beginning of the podcast, but I think I just missed it on my notes here. So listen, everyone have a great week. If you need a little protection heading into the stocks report, let me know. And if you want to go over any of these ideas, or if you want to go over your marketing plan for 2020, please get in contact with me. Have a great day, everyone. I'll talk to you all soon.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors, such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.